Nuclear New Mexico. This poor, beleaguered state has been hammered by nuclear since before the first atomic bomb blast, the Trinity test on July 16, 1945. Fighting for cleanup of the more than 400 existing and abandoned uranium mines, and against current pressures to expand uranium mining, which is against the wishes of Navajo Nation members as well as common sense, has continued as a full-time job for activists aware of and fighting against the dangers. How bad is it? It takes a genuine expert, someone who is not only a member of Navajo Nation, but a PhD whose work focuses on the dangers posed by radiation exposure from decades of uranium mining and what he's up against in trying to get the word out to warn people about it. And he tells you,
a lot of the argument that I hear about people that are in favor of nuclear power plant, they only talk about the narrative associated with the nuclear power plant where it doesn't give off greenhouse gases. But the whole nuclear fuel cycle, it does give off quite a bit of greenhouse gases. Also groundwater contamination, water contamination, plant growing deform. I've seen wildlife that have cancers on their body. So educating the public on these things will greatly help in addressing the issues that we're facing at the moment.
Well, when Dr. Tommy Rock explains the problems and his work towards protecting the Navajo Nation from what he labels the new uranium rush, you get a powerful perspective on that awful, deadly, dangerous seat that we all share.
Nuclear hot seat, what are those people thinking? Nuclear hot seat, what have those boys been drinking? Nuclear hot seat, the corium is sinking. Our time to act is shrinking, but our activists are linking. Nuclear hot seat, it's the bomb.
Welcome to Nuclear Hot Seat, the weekly international news magazine keeping you up to date on all things nuclear from a different perspective. We're a show for people who know nothing about nuclear who want to know something, and people who know something who would like to know just a little bit more. My name is Libby Halevi. I am the producer and host, as well as a survivor of the nuclear accident at Three Mile Island from just 1 mile away. So I know what can happen when those nuclear so-called experts get it wrong. This week, we look at a range of current problems on Navajo Nation land with Professor Tommy Rock, whose work focuses on, as his recently published article is headlined, protecting the Navajo Nation from the new uranium rush. We also look back on the 81st anniversary of the Trinity atomic bomb test in New Mexico, the start of the atomic age and its nightmares. We talk with Tina Cordova, a downwinder and founder of the Tularosa Basin Downwinders, and Bernice Gutierrez, who was born only 8 days before the Trinity blast and only 35 miles from ground zero. Both women touch upon the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act, RECA, both the triumph of getting it expanded and the failings of the extension and expansion. And we'll include some information on that other July 16 nuclear disaster in New Mexico, the 1979 Church Rock uranium tailings spill that has still not been cleaned up. We'll also have nuclear news from around the world, numnuts of the week for outstanding nuclear boneheadedness, and lots of honest and verifiable nuclear information. All of it coming up in just a few moments. Today is Tuesday, July 21st, 2026, and here is this week's nuclear news from a different perspective. In Rome, the Global Nobel Laureates Assembly on Artificial Intelligence and Nuclear War met on July 17 and 18, where they issued a pointed warning on emerging nuclear risks in an era of rapidly developing AI technology. The group's declaration, titled Humanity at the Threshold, a Declaration on Artificial Intelligence and Nuclear Weapons, followed 2 days of meetings among the Nobel laureates, top scientific and policy experts, and religious leaders in the papal villas of the Castel Gandolfo, a summer retreat for popes since the 1600s. The meetings included expert presentations on 8 themes related to the rapid advance of AI models, their use in military systems that include command and control of nuclear weapons, and the practical and ethical challenges connected to efforts to reduce the dangers that the AI nuke nexus poses to humanity. The Rome Declaration, adopted by participants of the Global Nobel Laureates Assembly, begins with the words, "Humanity stands at a defining moment in its history." And then it goes on to explain exactly what that means. We will have a link up to this declaration on our website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this episode, number 786. And now,
Nuclear Hot Seat, Nuclear Hot Seat, Nuclear Hot Seat, Num Nuts of the Week.
South Africa's Coburg Nuclear Power Station, on the outskirts of Cape Town, experienced 3 recent contamination events. They took place on June 30th, July 2nd, and July 7th, and involved elevated airborne radioactive contamination when there was a loss of power to ventilation units during maintenance work. Then, of course, they added that there was no danger to the public, and workers inside the power station, who may have been exposed, were screened and recorded radioactive contamination below the radioactivity a person is exposed to when they have a dental x-ray. This according to the National Nuclear Regulator, or NNR. Let's unpack that, shall we? I can't believe they're using the same talking points that were used to lie to us after Three Mile Island. When they talk about being the same as a dental x-ray is an extremely small, targeted burst of radioactivity that lasts for a nano of a second. And if you're taking care of yourself, you would already be wearing the same protection that a pregnant woman would get, meaning a lead-lined apron over your torso and another one specifically over your thyroid to protect it. That is a dental x-ray. But that level of radiation, when it is general, exposed, not limited, not targeted, but just out there that people are walking around and working in, that's a different level of exposure completely. But it's part of the nuclear industry's international playbook of what to say after an accident so that people don't think that it's an accident and has anything to do with them. Indeed, the South African nuclear regulator said on the record that recent events, quote, did not meet the criteria for classification as a nuclear or radiological incident or emergency, and it did not result in any off-site radiological consequences, end quote. Considering how long it takes for the impact of radiation exposure to show up in the human body, anywhere from 3 to 10 to multiple decades, it is unethical, misleading, and just plain wrong that they are wiping their hands of any responsibility or any difficulties and continuing with nuclear business as usual. The Coburg plant is Africa's only commercial nuclear power station. It was commissioned in the 1980s during apartheid and recently was granted a 20-year operational extension, clearing these reactors to be able to operate until 2040. Maybe by then, we'll learn what happened to the workers who were just recently exposed to nuclear radiation that was not focused and targeted like a dental x-ray, but just became part of the air that these people marinated in. And that's why Coburg Power Station operators and South Africa's National Nuclear Regulator and all those in the nuclear industry who are thinking of falling back on that old dental x-ray lie, you are this week's
Nuclear Hot Seat, Num Nuts of the Week.
Here's the first of this week's featured interviews. Dr. Tommy Rock is a member of the Navajo Nation from Monument Valley, Utah. He got his bachelor's degree from Arizona State University in Environmental Geography and Recreational Management in 2002 received his master's degree from Northern Arizona University in 2008, and returned to Northern Arizona University to receive his PhD in Earth Science and Environmental Sustainability in 2017. His particular interest is pursuing a multidisciplinary approach to solving complicated issues such as sustainability in the Southwest from a Native American perspective. He's particularly astute when it comes to discussing uranium mining issues. I spoke with Dr. Tommy Rock on July 14, 2026. Dr. Tommy Rock, thank you so much for joining us here today on Nuclear Hot Seat.
Hi, good afternoon.
Let's start out with helping people understand a bit about who you are. What is your background?
My background is I grew up in Monument Valley, Ojibwe.
And your tribal affiliation or anything you want to say about that?
I am from the Navajo Nation in Utah, and I grew up with my grandparents. My late grandfather was a World War II vet, and when he came back, he was a uranium miner. He died of cancer, and that's why it led me to get involved with uranium exposure research.
When was your first involvement with exploring or researching uranium and the circumstances that exist for your people?
I knew about uranium since when I was a little kid. My cousin and the neighborhood kids in Ojibwe, we used to explore all the abandoned uranium mines. We didn't know that it was hazardous to your health.
Were you told anything about it at all? Any warnings?
No. We were just told to stay away from there. But as kids, we were curious, so we went exploring.
How old were you when the Church Rock uranium tailing spill happened, and what was your awareness of it?
When it happened, I was just a little kid. I don't know, maybe in diapers or so. I was aware of it, so I didn't know anything about it.
For the listeners who may not be aware of it, the Church Rock disaster took place on July 16, 1979, and it released 1,100 tons of uranium waste and more than 94 million gallons of radioactive water into the adjacent Puerco River on Navajo Nation lands. What was done at the time and what has been done since to clear up this nuclear accident?
What was done at the time, just from reading the literature about what was done, it says some parts of it have been cleaned up. I think mostly on the New Mexico side, not on the Arizona side. I don't remember how far the cleanup happened. And ever since then, nothing really. There's been fenced off where the site happened. That place has been fenced off.
Is the site still dangerous, and is cleanup still happening there?
There's been talk about cleanup. I don't know when that's going to happen. There's some remediation that happened, but I think mostly towards the abandoned uranium mines. There's still a lot that needs to happen there.
And is it taking place, or has it stalled out?
They're talking about it. There's something.
Talk is cheap and cleanup is expensive, so I hope they actually move forward on that for you. As you were growing up, you said that your grandfather was a uranium miner and he had died from his exposure from cancer. When did you start looking into uranium mining and the situation on the reservation as providing a possible path for you in life for work?
I wasn't really thinking about that. I was just mostly thinking about my family here in Miami Valley in Ojibwe. The more I learned, the more how big of a problem was in other communities and realizing that it's the whole Navajo Nation, certain sections in a way. And the more I learned, the more I realized it's like the Western U.S., other tribes, in different aspects from the mining, the milling, to the nuclear disposals. Yeah, there's a lot going on in tribal communities with the nuclear fuel cycle from the beginning all the way to the end.
When did you decide to pursue this, and what was the educational path that you took to gaining the credentials and the knowledge that you needed?
Research, master degree, and a doctor degree. Research under Dr. Jana Lewis at University of New Mexico, did that for 2 years. Got some regulatory experience with Navajo EPA for 2 years and went back to school. Got my PhD, some more research, some postdoc at University of Utah with the Rocky Mountain Center for Occupational Environmental Health. Did that, and I went out to Princeton and got a prestigious research fellow there, the presidential research fellow at Princeton. Spent 2 years there, and I got recruited back to NAU.
You said that you worked under Dr. Johnny Lewis, and she was, and I believe still is, head of the Navajo Birth Cohort Study. Did you do any work on that, and what can you tell us about that study?
No, they were just talking about it. They're just ready to get off the ground. So I wasn't really involved with that. So that was after I left, they got into the birth cohort study. So that after.
Given the extensive nature of the uranium contamination on Navajo Nation, what have been some of the impacts that you have discovered, cited, researched, and shared with the public about the impact on your people?
That uranium is soluble, like through water, dust, and plants in certain areas where the former uranium mines are. There's some in plants. So it got into the food web, and we see some of the uraniums in sheep. So, in terms of livestock, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. There's still a lot of research that needs to be done. It's like from vegetation, like plants. Animals that forage like certain plants in areas that have been impacted, looking at other mammals that are around in the environment, just to see the impact of the food web. Yeah, there's a lot that needs to be done.
Your most recent article appeared in Navajo Times, and it was entitled Protecting the Navajo Nation from the New Uranium Rush. What did you mean by the New Uranium Rush?
New mining, same old mining being revived, producing uranium.
And what's behind, do you believe, this latest push for uranium mining?
I know that some of the nuclear plants are getting on back online. There's that, and then there's also building up our nuclear arsenal again. There's that, then there's nuclear weapons, armor.
So, in other words, creating more weapons for war.
Yep.
You wrote in this article, to prevent history from repeating itself, we must adopt a comprehensive management approach that prioritizes human life over corporate profit. What might that management approach look like?
Bad management, not being transparent, not informing the community of what's going on, what's happening with our natural resources, are they going after our natural resource again? That kind of stuff.
Among the points that you mentioned, and if you could comment on them, is co-managed monitoring. What would that be?
Having the community involved, having the community involved, the grassroots involved, the local tribal government involved, local chapters involved.
And what would that involvement look like?
Where they're being informed. Meetings, updates, training for the worst case scenario, that type of training. Community involvement, grassroots, local chapter official, tribal government. That'll be like citizen science, getting involved.
What are some of the issues that are raised by this new push to increase uranium mining?
The history hasn't been learned. So the history is repeating itself. All the abandoned uranium mines are still open, have they're not been remediated, and there's a lot more suffering that's going to happen, not only to the public health but also to the environment as well. There's no policy that will clean those up, nor is there any policy that will address the communities that are going to be impacted. And On top of that, our healthcare system sucks.
You wrote in the article that true safety comes from empowerment. You also spoke about the need to incorporate local expertise and traditional knowledge. How might that play out?
What I meant by that is being informed, which we talked about earlier, and being transparent of what's happening at the tribal government and federal level. What are the places that are being discussed? Also, the worst case scenario, the cleanup if there's a something happen, accident happen, and having the traditional knowledge holders getting involved and talking about how it has impacted our environment, our relationship with the environment, with each other as well. So there's tend to be like more a lack of trust with the elected officials, so to speak, because there's no transparency. So I was getting back to the root of democracy, basically. It's like the power is with the people, not individual that get elected to these offices. So we need to go back and reverse that and give the power back to the people, empower the people through knowledge, through transparency, for them to get the training that's necessary. Because if something bad happens, they're the one that are going to suffer. They're the one that are going to lose people. They're the one that will have a negative public health impact within their community, with their friends, loved ones, and so on and so forth. And on top of that, with some of the traditional ceremonial plants that we use where ceremonies take place, with impact on our water, groundwater.
What is happening in connection with RECA, the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act? This is supposed to provide compensation for those who have been impacted by environmental exposures, including and especially uranium. Does Navajo Nation fall under that umbrella completely? Is it just the uranium miners? How does this impact Navajo Nation?
I just mostly focus on the former miners, miners, millers, that's about it. It doesn't address the public that live in those areas that have, that's like around legacy minings.
Do you have any statistics? Are there any numbers about the health impacts that have been found on Navajo Nation connected with uranium?
I haven't searched it yet, so there probably is. But that number, I don't know.
What have you been focusing your research on?
I've just mostly been focusing on areas that have been impacted, and my focus has been on doing some more research related to cleanup.
Is there any kind of push happening to include other members of your community, of your people, under RECA, even if they weren't uranium miners?
Not to my knowledge.
Do you think they deserve to be there?
They should be there because they're the ones that are being impacted now. And a lot of the miners pass away, a lot of the millers pass away. So the people that are being impacted are the people that live in those legacy mines and mills.
In the article, you called the fight to protect your land a fundamental act of decolonization. Explain what you mean by that.
Basically, try to get our environment the way it was, which is not going to happen, and to stop mineral extraction. And it's like a reconnect with our environment, a clean environment.
And for those of us who are not necessarily familiar with the term, being colonizers or the need for decolonization. How would you define that?
Being assimilated, colonized, having the Western's ideology force on you and having your traditional values, culture being exterminated or brushed aside.
For those of us who wish to support you, what can we do that wouldn't make us colonizers stepping in the wrong place, but would be supportive and could be used.
Educate other folks on the dangers of uranium mining, or also the whole nuclear fuel cycle, because it greatly impacts not only my tribe, but other tribe as well, from mining, extraction, hauling, milling, also disposal of nuclear waste as well. And a lot of the argument that I hear about people that are in favor of nuclear power plant, they only talk about the narrative associated with the nuclear power plant where it doesn't give off greenhouse gases. But the whole nuclear fuel cycle, it does give off quite a bit of greenhouse gases. So educating people on that, also educating people on how the environment is impacted, how the community in those areas are impacted. Also, groundwater contamination, water contamination, plant growing deform. I've seen wildlife that have cancers on their body. So educating the public on these things will greatly help in addressing the issues that we're facing at the moment.
I've also read that some of the water, the groundwater, is so contaminated with uranium that you can't use it for drinking, and people have to truck in the water that they use for personal cooking or washing or anything involved with their bodies. Is that accurate?
Yes, that's accurate. And living in the Southwest and the West, it's like the need for quality water. Water is being reduced a lot more nowadays, which is unfortunate, but it's happening.
What are your plans moving forward? What do you hope to accomplish with your work?
Hopefully that some of the ideas that I have in terms of cleanup or ways to addressing exposures or the spread of exposure, they are able to use and can be used to address the spread of contaminants, and also using like water filtration systems and ways to improve water quality.
The article in Navajo Times, has that been picked up for other outlets? Has it been seen in multiple places?
I have no idea. I mean, I wrote it and sent that in. If it's being used other places, that's awesome. If not, hopefully someone shares it or seen it.
I have a couple of ideas about that to pass it on, and I will do that.
Cool.
I found the summation of that article, the recent article in Navajo Times, to be profound and visionary. Would you read that paragraph for us?
So whether we live within the four sacred mountains or have moved away for work or education, we remain one people. Living off the reservation does not grant us the luxury of staying uninvolved. We are the stewards of an oral tradition that has endured centuries of hardship. Our ancestors are buried in this soil. They fought so that we could exist today. Now, it is our time to speak for future generations, the ones whose names we do not know yet, but whose health and traditions we must safeguard today. We must ensure that the stories we pass down are not stories of sickness and contamination, but of resilience and restored relationship with the holy people and the land. To keep our tribe and our traditions alive, we must ensure the land remains capable of sustaining life.
Beautifully written and profoundly said. Is there anything you would like to add at this time that you haven't had a chance to get to yet?
Their vote counts. People's vote counts. They should realize the power of voting.
Dr. Tommy Rock, you are doing important work. You are an important voice. We will feature you on Nuclear Hot Seat anytime you have something you want to share with us. But for now, I want to thank you for being my guest this week on Nuclear Hot Seat.
Right. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Tommy Rock. We'll have a link up to the article I cited on protecting the Navajo Nation from the new uranium rush. It will be on our website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this episode, number 786. We'll continue with coverage of the Trinity atomic bomb test in New Mexico in 1945 in just a moment. But first, it's busy season again with nuclear anniversaries. 81 years since Trinity, Hiroshima, and Nagasaki. 47 years since the Church Rock uranium tailings pond spill. And as you just heard, ongoing issues with uranium mining and the resulting radiological contamination of land, water, animals, and people. Now is not the time to deal in approximations of the nuclear threat or the industry's info spin cycle. We need hard facts from knowledgeable, genuine experts, and that is why you need Nuclear Hot Seat. Every week, we seek to provide verifiable nuclear information and interviews with people who are genuine experts on the nuclear industry and its impact on life, health, and our shared genetic future. We also tell you stories of activists on the front lines around the world, their triumphs and challenges, and what any one of us can do to join these efforts. But Nuclear Hot Seat cannot survive without your support. I'm talking about donations, the only way we keep going. So if you're grateful for the information you get from this show, the exact right time to donate would be right now. And we make it easy. Just go to nuclearhotseat.com, click on the red donate button, and if you have Zelle, you can send money directly to info@nuclearhotseat.com. Nuclear Hot Seat is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, which means that anything you donate is tax deductible. And know that any amount helps. So don't wait. Donate now by going to nuclearhotseat.com. And know that whatever you can do to help support us, I'm deeply grateful that you're listening and that you care. Now here's our second featured interview. What are the lasting impacts of exposure to the nuclear radiation released on Navajo Nation land from the Trinity test, as well as uranium mining, transport of the ore, accidents, and all the rest? I spoke with two downwinders who explained their and their family's experience, as well as commenting on the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act. Note that these were recorded for our 2025 anniversary show, but unfortunately, all the issues raised here are still in effect. First, Bernice Gutierrez. She was born only 8 days before the Trinity blast and only 35 miles from ground zero. She explains the legacy of the bomb on the health of 5 generations of her family and her activism and research into resulting infant mortality. I spoke with Bernice Gutierrez on July 14, 2025. Bernice Gutierrez, I am so grateful that you are joining us today here on Nuclear Hot Seat.
Thank you so much for your interest.
Where were you born and grow up, and what was your connection with the Trinity site?
I was born 8 days before they detonated the bomb at the Trinity site at the White Sands Missile Range in Alamogordo, New Mexico, in Carrizozo, which is about 35 miles from ground zero. All of my family lived there at that time. And while they always describe the area as remote and uninhabited, we know that's not true. We have since found out that there were ranches living as close as 12 miles, and within a 50-mile radius, there were 13,000 people living in the area. I'm a testament to that. I did not grow up in Carrizozo, New Mexico. We moved to Albuquerque when I was 2 years old. But by then it was too late. All of my family had been exposed to radiation, and we have since felt the repercussions of that exposure.
What was the impact of that exposure from the Trinity blast on your family?
Cancer. Lots of cancer. 5 generations of cancer. The cancer started with my great-grandfather, who died of stomach cancer in 1952. My mother suffered from 3 different cancers. She had thyroid, skin, and breast cancer. A brother had thyroid cancer. His youngest daughter had thyroid cancer and about a year ago suffered from breast cancer. My only sister had 3 recurring exposures to thyroid cancer, with each one getting progressively worse. My other brother had prostate cancer. My youngest brother has thyroid disease, and on the recommendation of my endocrinologist, I had my thyroid removed. I had 3 children. My oldest son passed away in June of 2020, from myeloplastic dysplasia syndrome, which is a blood disorder that required he have a bone transmitter plant transplant that had to be done in Denver, Colorado, because they don't do that kind here in Albuquerque. He survived with that for about 10 months, and then he started getting sick. His oncologist had him go back to Denver, where he spent the last 2 months of his life. The last month of his life, he was on a ventilator in ICU. My only daughter survived thyroid cancer, and hopefully my youngest son hopefully won't ever get any type of radiogenic disease. But we here in this area never say if, we always wonder when. I have six grandkids, two great granddaughters, and it's a stress, always wondering and praying that they don't get it.
I am so sorry that that happened to you and to your family. And unfortunately, it's not in the past tense, because who knows what's coming next. I know you have been active with the Tularosa Basin Downwinders. When and how did you get involved with them?
One of my endocrinologists asked me if my family had ever been exposed to radiation. I didn't have a clue. I never learned about the bomb and the possibilities of what it could do if we were exposed to radiation. They don't teach it in school. And it wasn't until I was watching TV one evening and I saw Tina Cordova on the news. And she was talking about an upcoming event that the Tularosa Basin Downwinders Consortium was going to have. She talked about downwind of the bomb and the exposure to radiation. I got on the internet, looked up her information, called her, explained my family medical history, and the rest is history. I went to the event, learned so much about the possible explanation of why we were all getting so much cancer. So I became involved with them. This was about 10 years ago, and have been on the steering committee since then.
You have also done research that has been very important and comes into alignment with some of the work that was done by the late Kitty Tucker, who was the wife of the just recently deceased Bob Alvarez, about infant mortality. What was the work that you did?
We received his peer report, and that piqued my interest to look into specifically New Mexico for 1945. So I researched every death certificate in 1945 for infants a year and younger. I was able to access all but eight counties because the information was so blurry, I couldn't make it out. So I did research on church records, because the Catholics go to the church because they need to bury their babies. What I found was the church records did not have death certificates. The majority of them did not have death certificates. So I know that the research is not complete. But like, for example, in Carrizosa, where I was born, in 1944, there was only two babies that died. In 1945, 10 died.
And of course, infants are the most vulnerable to the impact of radiation. That was also part of Kitty Tucker's research that we will link to with this program, because she discovered a tremendous correlation between exposure to radiation from the Trinity blast and the deaths of infants in your area.
Right. And I also listed their cause of death. And it's very, very similar. There's a lot of similarities in the causes of death for these babies. And many, many were also born premature. And we feel that that's because the mother's reproductive organs were contaminated. And we also came across many that had congenital deformities.
What has the activity of the Tularosa Basin Downwinders Consortium and yourself been as we are coming up to the 80th anniversary of that bomb going off?
Well, we are currently going to have a major event in celebration. Well, if you want to call it a celebration of the 80th anniversary, our New Mexico legislature put in a request and it was approved. And we are going to have a memorial put up in front of the Trinity site. It is going to explain the downwinder history with some accurate information on one side, and on the back side, it's going to have a map of the area of New Mexico in 1945 based on a census record for the 1940s.
And that is going to indicate where the wind blew and where the radiation cloud went?
Oh, no. That's only going to tell you how many people were living in the area. What we were fortunate enough, we've had many scientists take an interest in our history. And the scientists from Princeton University, based on today's technology, did a meteorological study of the weather patterns for July 16th, 1945. And what they discovered is that the exposure, the fallout, not only covered New Mexico, but covered 46 other states, Canada, and Mexico. They have since updated their research and found that the two states that were the most exposed to the fallout were New Mexico and Nevada, with Nevada receiving the majority of it and New Mexico right behind.
What do you hope the attention on Trinity and this memorial that is going on, what do you hope that that will accomplish?
Many, many people go to the Trinity site when it's open. Used to be open twice a year, and for some reason they've cut it down to once a year. But every time the gates are open, we go out there and we do what we call a peaceful protest. And during these past few years that we've been doing it, we have distributed information, educational information about the true story, because people have come back out from the Trinity site and told us that the historian that was in there did not describe the accurate history.
Didn't mention downwinders and the impact of the radiation and the fallout?
No, not at all. So we were there doing that. And as a result, last year when we went in October, we found that more and more, because it's amazing how many thousands of cars go in there on that day. But we're noticing that less and less New Mexico plates are going in there. We have counted the plates. 46 or 47 of the states have been accounted for. They get a ton of visitors when it's open. And I can understand why. It's a historical site. But the sad thing is, even though it's a historical site, it hasn't been an accurate retelling of the history.
And is it still radiologically active? Is there danger in the dust and in the soil and in the air on the Trinity site?
We believe it is, because we have had people go in there with Geiger counters and come back out and tell us that there's hot spots there. So apparently there is still radiation inside that site. The half-life of plutonium, which was in the bomb, is 24,000 years. But there was not only plutonium. That was not the only element that was in the bomb. There was strontium and cesium, and those half-lives are pretty long too. So we feel that there is still contamination in the wind. Every time the wind blows from the white sands, from the dust, because New Mexico is known for its dust storms. And we feel is still being distributed. We also have another scientist by the name of Dr. Michael Ketterer, who has taken some samples of soil and has found that the area around Los Alamos in Acid Canyon has the most plutonium ever. Now, this study was done maybe just a few months ago. He said there is more plutonium present in that canyon than there was in Chernobyl.
We've had Dr. Ketterer on the show several times, and he's always a source of shocking and important information. In addition to the unveiling of the monument at Trinity, there are also going to be events involving Catholic bishops. Tell us what that is about.
Archbishop Wester and Bishops Baldacchino and Walls. Baldacchino's from Las Cruces and Walls is from Gallup. they're going to be going inside the Trinity site. And I'm imagining, praying, we had hoped to be able to be included in that and have them come out and do the blessing of the memorial. But apparently time's not going to permit. But they are going to be going and giving Mass in Tularosa that evening at 6. We are going to follow that service with the reception and then follow that with our 16th annual candlelight vigil. Our vigil, we light a luminaria for every name of every deceased person from cancer, and we read off their names to make sure that they're never forgotten.
Wow. Going forward, what actions are planned by the Tularosa Basin Downwinders Consortium, and what do you hope can still be achieved in terms of spreading awareness of the event and its impact on the human beings, on the life that was living around it?
Well, for the first time in our history, on July 3rd of this year, we were finally accepted into the RECA program and are going to start receiving compensation for New Mexicans. The bill that it was included in is also going to cut Medicaid, the SNAP program, and some Medicare. So unfortunately, our inclusion into RECA had to be made with some compromise, one of which was healthcare was stripped out of it. So if healthcare is stripped out of the RECA program and New Mexico and all the rest of the country experiences a cut in Medicaid, New Mexicans are going to be in a world of hurt, because 47% of New Mexico is on Medicaid.
If you could say anything to those who are right now still, and it seems forever, promoting nuclear weapons in particular, as somehow necessary to the safety of this country, what would you say to them?
Don't do it. The nuclear weapons has damaged many, many people, my family included. And my family is only one of thousands with a history like mine. And we know they are wanting to start up nuclear testing again. And we know that Los Alamos is currently making plutonium pits. And all we can hope and pray for is that they don't do it. They haven't even fixed the last problem they created. We don't need to create additional problems.
Bernice, you have been very generous with your time and your information. My heart goes out to you and your family for what you have been through. And I thank you so much for being to share so honestly and so directly with the listeners of Nuclear Hot Seat.
Thank you so much for your interest.
Bernice Gutierrez. We will have a link up to the cornerstone research on infant mortality after the atomic bomb explosion that was mentioned in this interview. It was by Kitty Tucker, and the title is Trinity, the Most Significant Hazard of the Entire Manhattan Project. It will be linked on the website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this episode, number 786. By the way, Navajo Nation's Anna Rondon, a frequent guest on Nuclear Hot Seat, just sent us a link to an article about two uranium ore trucks overturning on Navajo Nation highways. The mining company, Energy Fuels, and officials are reassuring the public that there is no danger because the truck was empty. But had it previously hauled uranium ore? And what was the nature of the decontamination that took place after it hauled and before it overturned on U.S. Highway 160 on Navajo Nation land? As of recording this, no one has bothered to answer that question. For the second Downwinder interview, I spoke with Tina Cordova. She is a sixth-generation native New Mexican, born and raised in the small town of Tularosa in south-central New Mexico, less than 50 miles from the Trinity site. In 2005, Tina co-founded the Tularosa Basin Downwinders Consortium with the late Fred Tyler. Since then, she has been an unstoppable campaigner for the rights of those harmed by radiation downwind of the Trinity atomic bomb blast, and which has made her an internationally honored and respected leader. I spoke with Tina Cordova on July 14, 2025. Tina Cordova, in many ways, when it comes to the work around Trinity, you are the mother of us all. And with the passage of the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act about 2 weeks ago now, something that you have been fighting for years, what does that mean to the struggle around Trinity?
Well, I will tell you that the acknowledgement has meant a great deal to not only me, but everybody that I've spoken to. And that was an amazing big first step. But we're not there yet. They have only given us a 2-year extension, which will not be enough time for the people in New Mexico, tens of thousands of people in New Mexico who will want to and should apply to the program and receive compensation. 2 years is far too little time for people to gather records that are in some cases 80 years old. So you can imagine the obstacle there. So the 2-year extension is, we're grateful for this. It's a wonderful acknowledgement. It's the first time the government has ever acknowledged that they harmed us. And we will continue to fight. We would like to see a long-term extension, and we would also like to see them put the health care coverage back into the bill. It passed with health care coverage last year out of the U.S. Senate. And obviously, one of the things they've told us forever is that it's going to cost too much. It's just unacceptable that they've stripped out the health care coverage when that is probably what is most important to us as people who are sick and dying. So we will take the win, and we will dust ourselves off in a couple of days and pick up where we were right before they passed this and keep on going. And not only for those two reasons, but because they have, again, arbitrarily left out people like our sisters and brothers in Guam, who we have lobbied with side by side, who we have stayed in Airbnbs with all over, who are now like family to us. And we can never look away from the fact that we have now left out the people in Colorado and Montana, in all of Arizona that wasn't included, all of Nevada that wasn't included. And so we have work ahead of us. But we're grateful for this. We'll take this win. It's a gigantic step forward. They've opened the door to us, and we believe that now we will walk through and we will continue to ask for more, for what we deserve and for what the people that have been left out deserve.
With this being the 80th anniversary of the detonation of the bomb at Trinity, what is the significance of this anniversary for you?
It is amazing that it took 80 years for the stars to align for us. You know, people said to me over and over, at the end of last year when we came so close and we didn't manage to pull it off, people were so horribly disappointed. People said to me over and over, it's not going to happen. We're going to wait again for years. It's just not going to happen. And I said, you know, we're not in a worse place. We're not in a better place. We're in this place. And there will come a day when the stars align. And it happened, July 3rd. And so, you know, the 80th anniversary seems to have brought about some interesting recognition, because also for the first time ever, the state of New Mexico is placing a sign, a permanent sign, at the entrance to the Trinity site, where people stop and look at the historic marker that's there that pays homage to the science and the scientists. But there's never been a mention of us. And now we will have our permanent sign placed there that will acknowledge the sacrifice and the suffering of the people of New Mexico who were enlisted into the service of that bomb without consent, without knowledge, and who've been dying ever since. And so the 80th anniversary brings a tremendous amount of recognition and acknowledgement for us this year.
Tina, your work through the years has been magnificent. You have been a true leader for people when they needed it. I know it hasn't been easy for you, because it never is, but you've done it. Congratulations on how far this has gone, and let's keep working. We'll support you here at Nuclear Hot Seat and do whatever is possible to help you move forward to whatever the next milestone is.
Well, thank you, Libby. You know, as I do, that we dedicate ourselves to these things, and it becomes long-term, and it becomes our life's work. you have done just the same thing that I have chosen to do. And so I appreciate you very much. I appreciate the lens that you have placed on this for us and all the times that you've allowed us to tell our history, especially at times when people didn't want to hear it. And so thank you, thank you, thank you. And we send you our regards.
My heart to you as well. Tina Cordova. You can find out more about her work and the Tularosa Basin Downwinders Consortium on their website, trinitydownwinders.com.
Activists, activists, shout out, shout out, shout out.
Interested in having an atomic film festival of your own? The Bulletin of the Atomic Scientist published an article by Alex Wellerstein, 13 Films That Are Essential to Understanding the Nuclear Age. It lists everything from well-known films such as Dr. Strangelove and Oppenheimer, to the lesser-known Japanese manga film Barefoot Gen, and the BBC stunner Threads. We will link to this article so you can see all 13 and go running off to the library or find them online to download. That link will be on our website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this episode, number 786. And a reminder that in 2 weeks, on August 6th, the anniversary of the atomic bomb being dropped by the U.S. on Hiroshima, my play, Atomic Bill and the Payment Due, will be presented in a commemorative staged reading under the auspices of the South Country Peace Group in Bellport, Long Island. It starts at 6 p.m. The tickets are free, and we'll have a link to more information up on the website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this episode, number 786. This has been Nuclear Hot Seat for Tuesday, July 21st, 2026. If you'd like to get Nuclear Hot Seat delivered via email every week, easy peasy. Sign up on our website, nuclearhotseat.com, by filling in the yellow opt-in box, your first name, an email address, and every week you will get one, just one, email from us with a link to that week's show and a short description of its content. So don't miss out. You need to keep up with this news, and this is the best way to do it. If you have a story lead, a hot tip, or a suggestion of someone to interview, send an email to info@nuclearhotseat.com. And remember always, if you can go to Nuclear Hot Seat and donate, thank you. We appreciate it, and any amount will help us out. This episode of Nuclear Hot Seat is copyright 2026, Libby Halevi and Nuclear Hot Seat. All rights reserved, but fair use allowed, as long as you cite the program, website, names of any guests whose comments you use, and me. For now, this is Libby Halevi of Nuclear Hot Seat, reminding you, we can always come up with the date that a nuclear emergency begins, but we can never come up with a date that it's over, because once it starts, it's never over. And if you doubt that, talk with the people of Navajo Nation. There you have it, your weekly nuclear wake-up call. So whatever you do, don't go back to sleep, because we are all in the nuclear hot seat.
Nuclear hot seat. What are those people thinking?
Nuclear hot seat.
What have those boys been drinking?
Nuclear hot seat.
The corium is sinking. Our time to act is shrinking, but our activists are linking. Nuclear hot seat. It's da bomb.